Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, a proud member of Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Aramithius, and this week we are carrying on our look at the Truth in Sequence. We are now up to Volume 7, and we will be looking at wheels and circles and everything in between, which can possibly be nothing at all. But before we get to that, I just want to say thank you ever so much to Binary Technician for my latest review on iTunes. Thank you ever so much, and I'm really glad you enjoy the show. I'm sorry that the audio isn't always perfect. I really should know better at this point, and I'll do my best to fix it. Thank you ever so much, Binary Technician, and I hope you enjoy listening. And now to the Truth in Sequence. The Truth in Sequence, Volume 7, taken from the Sermons of Deldries Morvain, 4th Tourbillion to the Mainspring Everwound. By the word, I wind the gears. Think now on the wheel, to all things it appertains. And now why is that? Why is the wheel so important? I think part of it is because the Clockwork Apostles value machinery and everything that that implies, and the wheel is one of the great simple machines. It just does things, makes everything easier. But also, it's relevant to everything because the Elder Scrolls cosmos can be modelled to be like a wheel. If you consider Mundus the hub and the eight Aedra, or the eight Atarda who gave themselves up for Mundus to be the spokes, and then the 16 gaps, or the 16 voids, as they're called in the Truth and Sequence, as the Daedric Princes, that gives you a basic structure for the universe. The Rim, depends on who you ask, but generally speaking, that's something like Aetherius or the Void or something similar. But it's relevant to everything because it is the structure of the universe. Is there anything so sacred as the wheel? Like Tamriel Final, the wheel both moves and does not move. Anuvanasi. The axle sleeps while the spokes make haste, round and round in reflective circles. Now here dwells a nameless secret, trial to the tribunal. Does a thing move when it moves in circles? And we're back to those semi-Buddhist riddle questions again with this. A wheel both moves and does not move because it doesn't really progress. If it just goes round, is it going anywhere? And in particular, and with the talk of the axle is rotating. Is the axle moving? Because it's just going round and back again, round and back again. It doesn't make progress, which is something important to note for later. And it also reminds me of something that I read in one of China Mieville's books in Kraken, that one of the things that the cult who worships the Kraken considers most important about the Kraken and most mystical is that it moves while looking like it doesn't, and effortlessly moves and doesn't move all at the same time, which is again part of the thing here. It's partly to do with the appearance of moving and not moving and holding that as a paradox, but also something to do with a lack of effort in doing so, which we'll talk about a little later. Motion lies at the heart of the Nirn ensuing, but not all motion is nameless. Not all movement earns his blessing. The divine metronome, that is Sothisil, calls the first motion the motion of lines. Line motion is the motion of simple minds, the motion of weak wills and scholars' vanity. Forward, it cries, forward to the fruits of cheap ambition, forward to the promise of everlasting kingdoms, forward to the mirage that the sages call progress. And I just want to pause there and say that while there is a progression in Sothisil's thought, or at least the Clockwork Apostles' thought, going from Nirn prior to Nirn ensuing to Tamriel final, it's not necessarily progress. It's change from one thing to another, and an evolution. But is it necessarily progress? I want to bring in a quick thought here from Michel Foucault, who basically railed against the notion of progress in some of his books. Most particularly the the idea of prison or something like that. His book where he talks about where prisons come from and the notion of madness. And he basically charts the history of how people have considered insanity throughout history. And there is no linear motion of now we're moving from ignorance to understanding about what madness is and how it works. It's just change, it's just difference, because there is no real progress in terms of how it's understood, because there is no definite end goal. There are effective treatments, maybe, but it's only a treatment if you consider it something that is defective, so to speak. And the way that madness has been considered historically isn't a linear drive from one place to another, as I say, and I think this is partly what's going on here, that it's also about striving, that they're also chasing after things that are of no real worth, while the circular motion that Deldries and potentially the entire Clockwork Apostles consider virtuous is something that's almost effortless, but I'm getting ahead of myself, we'll get to that a bit later. These misguided pioneers venture out into their wild tomorrows, and the tomorrows after that, certain of their worth, their virtue. But what profits a man or mer to gaze deep into a single future? The aims of mortals are narrow, far too narrow. To move forward is to ignore infinite angles in favour of one. It is the act of a beast or a child. Now, I want to pause here and think about what that means. It's got two different types of meaning, so far as I can tell, one of which relates to geometry and the other to economics, if you like. The economic meaning is opportunity cost. It's the idea of when you do something or when you commit resources to something, then the potential for you to do something else with it is wasted. When you don't do something, you have an infinite potential of what you could do. The instant you do something narrows it down and just collapses it into one potentiality and one actuality rather, and so you're collapsing an infinity into one, into a singular focus, if you like. And the geometric side, this talks about circles a lot, this particular volume, and a circle is infinite angles. It is a thing that has an infinite number of sides, an infinite number of perspectives, and so to narrow it down is to move away from the circle towards the line that is progress, that is the one angle. So that's being disregarded there. And you've also got the general notion that if you focus on a single future and you're single-minded about something, you potentially ignore the consequences or other possibilities out there. You focus on one narrow path and you don't see what effect happens as a result of what you're doing, and you possibly ignore other fruitful things on the way. So it's something that, according to this sermon, only a beast or a child does, because they're only thinking about themselves, only thinking about their own view, their own gains, rather than the whole. The Clockwork God spurns vanity in the guise of courage. These explorers' travels only lead them further from Tamriel Final, Anuvanasi. And I just want to pause here, because we've heard Anuvanasi a lot in the Truth and Sequence so far. And if you look at where it's situated in these texts, it's always after something that is considered either a truism or something that Deldries thinks will be the case. So exactly what Anuvanasi is and it means, I take it to be something like Amen. So Amen is Hebrew for let it be, or make it so, almost. That the expressions of Anuvanasi here are almost proverbial, or they follow proverbs, that the people straining after progress and the idea that that only leads them further from Tamriel Final, Anuvanasi is a way of saying, of course that's the case, it's always so. And for all the other examples that we have, it feels quite similar when you look for it in the texts. Earlier in this sermon we have, like Tamriel Final, the wheel both moves and does not move. That's considered to be a truth of the Clockwork Apostles, or at least of Deldry's Morvain. When you hear about the hiss of pistons in Volume 6, that is the voice of Sotha Sill. It is so. That's what I think Anuva Nasi is, having gone through it. It's just an expression that confirms proverbs and truisms as a thing that the Clockwork Apostles believe to be the case and always be the case. It's the kind of the mark of a timeless truth in the way that proverbs are for the Hebrew Bible, say. Set speaks of the second motion only in whispers. The pendulum, or named oscillation, is the tick-tock motion, the motion of entropy and false hope. None but the clockwork god may claim its dark power. With each wide swing, it shouts Lorcan's lie. Hail intentions divided. Hail cursed multitudes. Do not stand in the pendulum's path, Ash Child. Only the mainspring ever wound may bear its weight. If the idea of progress from one thing to another was potentially linked to Nirn prior, then this is almost Nirn ensuing the process of becoming something else, the named oscillation and the duality that makes up the current Mundus and the current Nirn. It's also the motion of everything bad. This is how the Clockwork Apostles consider everyone who's made a mistake. They look at Lorcan's lie and consider duality and this, that, and the other to be bad things. So the second motion, as in the swing back, which we've heard in previous sermons, is this pendulum that swings both ways, that is that fundamental duality at the heart of Nirn. And I also think there's potentially a nod here to Sotha Sill's origins as a god. The line, none but the clockwork god may claim its dark power, if it's associated so much with Lorcan, as it talks about Lorcan's lie, it makes me think none but the clockwork god can claim Lorcan's lie, or claim the power that comes from Lorcan's lie. So it's potentially also an admission that Sotha Sill's power comes from Lorcan's heart. I don't know whether that's intentional on Deldry's part, or a little Easter egg that Leman Tuttle snuck in there, a little nod to Sotha Sill's actual origins to the players who potentially know that, but it certainly feels that way from how it's said here, that Sotha Sill is the only one who can claim the power of Lorcan. That gets given a slightly more virtuous angle with the last line, only the mainspring ever wound may bear its weight. So only Sotha Sill can hold this power and contain it and potentially stop it. When I first read this, I had an image of Sotha Sill kind of straining against a pendulum almost. So it's someone who is aiming to stop the movement of the pendulum, maybe, but that's just me spitballing. Last is the reciprocating motion, the sublime piston, the lover's embrace. Like the father of mystery, it gives and takes in equal measure. As the bow upon the strings, it calls forth the sublime, and that's music, by the way. A bow on the strings of something like a violin is music. As the carpenter's saw, it wrenches back and forth, sundering the named pursuits of lesser myrrh. Only a nameless heart may harness its strength. The artist, the star counter, and the engineer call it muse. The truth-blind multitudes call it destroyer. Now, this is a representation of a whole that has multiple parts, a multifaceted thing. That this is a single thing that has multiple elements. It's compared to an embrace between lovers that but has two actors, but is a single thing, a single instance, a single act that is balanced and mutually supportive, that sort of thing. Giving and taking in equal measure suggests a balance and something that incorporates multiple elements within itself. It's not directly contrasted with the whole multitudes thing of the mistakes that everyone else makes, but I think it's worth contrasting with it. It's a multifaceted unity. If it can do multiple things, it's a single thing that's encompasses all things. It's, I want to say, monistic in its outlook, that all things are one thing, again, which we've talked about in, I think, the first cast when we looked at volume one of this. And we've also, again, got another potential contradiction here, that if it gives and takes and is both unified and multifaceted, it's calling back to that movement which is not movement, which we talked about earlier. And it's a riddle to do with what an axle does, how gears operate, and just functioning as part of a perfectly tuned machine, that there are multiple parts but only one machine, one whole, one truth. And the last line, the artist, the star counter, and the engineer call it Muse, the truth-blind multitudes call it Destroyer. That's, again, calling back to Volume 6, where Deldries asks us to consider that there are two Clockwork Cities. There is the perfect one, and the one that contains only punishment and damnation and horror. So it all depends on the perspective of the viewer here and what your aims are. If you're looking towards progress, you're going after a named pursuit, something which is defined and is something that you are striving towards, then you're inevitably going to be disappointed with this. Whereas if you don't think of progress as a big thing, if you are simply looking to craft something that is perfect and self-contained and not look for anything more, then Tamriel Final is what you're after. And just to clarify on something I said I was going to pick up on a bit earlier, the idea of striving for a result is something that Rotten Deadite has talked about a lot in his analysis of the 36 Lessons of Vivek, that the idea of willing something, or the idea of love for Vivek, is the act of doing something without concern for the result, without concern for the consequence, that it is what you would do anyway, that it's just something that is in your, it is in your nature to do. And so that's kind of a perfection for Vivek, and I think it's potentially something that Deldries is driving towards here, particularly given the comments in earlier volumes where it's being talked about as something that's inevitable, something that you can't help but either help to be or just stand in the way of and get flattened. So going towards something that is inevitable, you're not necessarily striving for a result, you are just simply helping the course of nature, you are being a cog in the machine that's inevitably driving and grinding towards this particular end result, or this particular process that is the new Nern. Do you see now, child of the tribunal? Every movement hides intent. To stray from the wheel is to abandon the clockwork god. In the Tamriel Final, all shall spin and only spin. Anuvanasi. By the word, I wind the gears. And that final point is again bringing into the contrast between lines and circles here, that every movement hides intent. You can't see what direction someone will end up in with a single movement, that is someone going straight or are they going into a curve that will go into a circle. If you look at a single movement, they will both look the same, so you can't tell what people are intending and what they're striving for in the single movement. But again, it's the hammering home here of straying from the wheel is to abandon the clockwork god, to abandon the way the universe works in a way, and everything that Sothisil is doing to undergird that. And that final line of in the Tamriel Final, all shall spin and only spin, it's again a nod to the inevitability of Tamriel Final and Nern ensuing, that there will eventually be this perfect state and you will be made to conform to its patterns whether you want to or not. Which reminds me quite a bit of some of the expressions in, I think it's St. Paul's letters as well as the Book of Revelation, that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow. It's not that everyone will acknowledge Jesus for who he is, but that every knee shall bow. Everyone will acknowledge Jesus for what he is at the end. And in the same way, everyone here, everyone shall only spin, because circular motion is all that will exist in the perfect Tamriel Final when it happens. not if. And that's about it for all my thoughts on Volume 7 of The Truth in Sequence. Just before I go, Crandrak in the Written in Uncertainty Discord had an absolutely fantastic thought on Volume 4 when it talks about the golden masks and the truth of dancing glass, which, to quote, is this: "Pay heed to the laws of golden masks, but know also their limits. Pay heed to the songs of dancing glass, but know also the boundaries of their scale." They are, according to Crandrak, and I think they're onto something here, expressions of the Ordinators and Buoyant Armagers, respectively. Golden masks, if you look at the Indriel armour that the Ordinators wear, and dancing glass, Buoyant Armagers are warrior poets who traditionally dress in glass armour. So I definitely think Crandrak is onto something with that interpretation, and it's also a put down of Vivek, which is why Deldries asks Alm and V to forgive the heresy that they're talking about, because Deldries is essentially saying in the line after that, yeah, you kind of know half of the truth, but not all of it, because you're sitting on your laurels, because their truth is the truth of inertia. If you want to join in those conversations, please join the Written in Uncertainty Discord. There's links to it in the show notes here. And if you want to help support the show and get early access to all my content, then become my patron at patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. And also, you can check out some of the other shows on the Robots Radio Network at robotsradio.net. They are on a diverse range of subjects, everything from Destiny to film reviews to the Outer Worlds to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. But there's something there for everyone. If you're into geek culture, go and check them out at robotsradio.net. Next week, we'll be moving on to Volume 8 and breaking out our Elmafex dictionaries again. So until then, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and hosted by Aramithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. Check out Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northern Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Should introduce myself. I'm Corin Black, a humble half-demon, and folks around Baltimore call me the Devil's Runt. Here we go, finally moving again.
How do you feel about methamphetamines?
You know, devil's blood don't make you a devil.
Under the Shroud. Fantasy, noir, and horror from Baltimore's sin-soaked streets. Find creator Ian Humphrey on Twitter at @fictionalian.
Hi, I'm Sebastian Azar, and I'm inviting you to the Hidden Pixels podcast, a show exploring those gaming stories you might have missed on your first playthrough, whether it's a side character's dark past or a small event that changed the entire fictional universe. We want to explore with gamers and story lovers alike. So join us every 2 weeks for the Hidden Pixels podcast. And if you like what you heard, subscribe and leave us a review. We appreciate all of your feedback, and we can't wait to share these stories with you. Thanks.